Hello, this is Super Dan Anderson, and you are listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneer Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee in the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Tell them Super Dan sent you.
Aloha, everybody. This is Professor Gary Lee talking from the AMAA Masters and Legends Archives radio show, Parts Unknown, where we feature the personal up-to-date interviews of pioneers and legends for karate and the American martial art icon. A very special show tonight. I'm really excited about just being on the air, and today was a very special day, an eye-opener for a few of us who worked the show. And, you know, the question that was brought up today with some of the producers and our new sponsors, how important is Sport Karate pioneers and legends who established it in the 60s and the 70s, how important is their history? And is this show really worth the time that we put the effort in to make it happen? Well, you know, you can answer that and help us out a lot if you just call in and say 657-383-1410 and just give us your opinion, or you can email me at ProfessorGaryLee@gmail.com. Or you can call in at the end of the show, that number, at the end of the show tonight, and give us your personal opinion how important it is. We got some incredible people on tonight, and we're doing like a double whammy. And I'm doing two ladies at once. And a few years back, we actually did something pretty spectacular. We put together through the Sport Karate Museum Archives a pink and black celebration. And it was along with the roast, and we honored over 100 lady fighters and kata ladies across America, spanning over 50 years. And the two ladies tonight were part of that celebration, and they were known to be some of the competitors. One's got an incredible history, and one was actually in the very beginning part of Sport Karate in America with women. You know, these two ladies of the grit and iron who we honored tonight, they competed from the, like I said, the 60s, Sport Karate was invented, up to the years ago, when one of them came out and won a Texas School State Championship in kata. Both are old school, and both are karate fanatics, and both teach, and are avid masters and teachers of Tai Chi. Karen and Shihan Darling, are you on the line right now?
Yes, I am, Professor.
Well, I'm going ahead and introduce you a little bit and let them know that I'm going to introduce you more in depth when we go to part one of the interview. But right before we I didn't want to be rude. I wanted to bring you on before I do some of the beginning parts. And I want to talk about the book tonight. Because you guys are special, my producer, Hachi Jesse Bowen, has called me and expressly said that if anyone calls into the Who's Who in the martialarts.com tonight, they can get the book for $29.99. I believe that's almost half the cost of what the book actually costs. And they're doing that just because we have a special lady show tonight. And if any of the ladies are listening and want to tell another lady about who we have tonight, the special guest, again, call 657-383-1410. Now, we're adding some new sponsors to our radio blog, and we're very excited to share their product and their service. And to start off, we got our dear friend, Shihan Dana Abbott, and Action Flesh. You can actually see his banner up on the website that we just put up, and we introduced at Mr. Goldberg's event, which is also, by the way, another new sponsor in the Action Martial Arts Magazine. And all the incredible things he has done and he's doing. Just this weekend, Quite a few people were at the event and received awards, and we'll be talking about that. But, you know, Mr. Goldberg is a visionary, way ahead of his time as far as producing, and probably and does have the largest martial arts event in America right now. And, our, of course, our old sponsor and an old friend who does our books, Who's Who in American Martial Arts, Century Fitness. And then our new sponsor today, Dr. Nick Chamberlain and the Gathering of Eagles, and we're going to have a pretty detailed information on him later on in the show. He also does the Kenpo Hall of Fame or the International Hall of Fame, and it's a gathering of teaching. If you love to be taught, to be around the real masters of martial arts, this is an event to come to in August, and we'll talk about that later. And always, always, we have to mention our friends at Black Belt Magazine, Mr. Floyd Burke and Mr. Robert Young, editors, who's always been there and been supportive through the years for the Sport Karate Museum Archives. The new format, which we'll go into more detail about later on, toward the end of the show, it's going to be on 24/7. We'll have past shows. Right now, up right now, there's Monster Man's Ever Eddie Show and Mr. George Minshew Show. Business information, detailed business information. Incredible guests like Lawrence Arthur and other people. We've invited Mr. Stephen Oliver, Mr. Jeff Smith, and so on. And then we'll also go into Zen and meditation moment with Jesse Bowen and his incredible program he's doing. And then we have a brand new, and I'm excited about this, a phone app. In other words, you can not just listen to us on the computer now, or you can listen to us on the phone, but you can actually go to an app and get detailed information what we're going through. And this is pretty exciting stuff. Thank you always for the emails. And we have a very special segment that we'll answer a couple emails tonight with the ladies and their input. And, you know, we always say this on this part of the show. You know, we're losing an entire generation of incredible black belts, you know, men and ladies, who laid the foundation and formed and developed the strongest systems in the world in martial arts. You know, the passing of each one saddens, you know, the Sport Karate Museum Archives greatly. So we suggest that you seek out and talk with as many of that generation as possible. If you, you know their email, you know their address, you know their phone number, give them a call and tell them that you appreciate that, what they did for us, creating Sport Karate for 60 years. You know, again, I emphasize this phone number because I really want to impress the producers and the investors in the show and let them realize that there's a group out there of people, and you're going to grow, that really care about sport karate, and you'll realize it tonight when we do our interview with these incredible two ladies. And that number, again, is 657-383-1410. Now, going back to my ladies on the phone, I'm going to call you Shihan Darlene, and I'm going to call you Sifu Karen. And I know you have other titles and more important titles, but we're going to start with that. And I'm going to start with a very basic question. How did you get started? Who influenced you? And what was your first impression of martial arts? And Shihan, darling, go first. And when you get done, we'll let Karen answer.
Well, thank you for that question, Professor. When I was very young, I wandered down the sidewalk from my grandmother's house in Gulfport, Mississippi, and I saw a gentleman teaching martial arts. He was teaching Taekwondo in a cinder block building with concrete floors with no screens on the windows, and he had a group of men and older teenage boys in there, and I was hooked. I mean, it was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen, and I wanted that.
This was in the 80s or the 70s or the late 60s. This was early 60s.
Go way back. Dirt. I mean, I'm older than dirt, Gary, older than dirt. It was in the 60s. And
60s. Yes.
The only time I got to practice was, and because this gentleman was so gracious about it and allowed me to watch. And then finally he allowed me to sit inside the dojo. And then, you know, eventually he allowed me to actually practice, and he taught me, but I could only do that in the summertime. And until I got old enough as a teenager to drive myself to classes and to seek out a school and everything. But my mother was very much opposed, so I had to kind of hide and sneak away and you know, for one thing, girls didn't do those things, according to my mother. The other thing is I started playing piano just about the time I turned five, and she had some sort of grandiose dreams that I would be a concert pianist, and punching canvas bags did not work well with those dreams of concert piano. So had to slip away.
Tiffany Karen, what was your beginning?
Well, mine was in 1959. I was sitting at home, and my father came home and told my brother, my older brother Keith, that he had just met someone who was opening a school, and he was going to be teaching something called judo. And I about jumped out of my skin, because for some reason I knew what that was. And in 1959, nobody knew what judo was. But I
I
have to go. I have to go, Dad. And they said, you're a girl, right, Darlene? You're a girl.
Right.
You can't
right.
do that.
Girls don't do that.
And you're not going to do that. And I said, I have to. And it was so important, and I never missed a class. I went with my brother, and I would just sit and watch the whole night. And finally, after 3 months, the sensei, Richard Cavallucci, went over to my father and said, are you going to let me teach this kid? She's bouncing off the walls here. And he finally explained to my dad that over in Japan, women all did judo. And he talked him into it, and they thought I would, you know, once I got it out of my system, I wouldn't do it anymore. So in July 1959, I bowed onto a mat, and I've never bowed off.
We're talking early 60s when guys weren't doing karate, and there weren't any women in karate schools, and there wasn't any children in karate schools.
No,
so we're talking
no
early,
way.
Early times. Now, my next question, and both of you guys can answer this, and you kind of did a little bit already, but I really want to know. I mean, this is parts unknown, and that's my reputation. How hard was it? How do the guys really treat you? I mean, come on, they had to share the bathroom with you now, and they had to, you know. How hard was it?
There were some rough times, but there were some good times too. Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about the bad times first. Okay, Sheehan, darling, go first, and Karen. How bad was it? How tough was it?
Well, my bad times were more with the new people that would come in. It was the people that were there already when I started, and then after I started to make rank, accepted me, and they never doubted. But then there would be that guy that would come in, and you know, he's like 225 pounds, and I'm not very a big right. person. I'm kind of a small person, and then you know that he would look at me and think, "What's this instructor doing, lining me up with this little girl? You know, with this little person?" And so they would try to show me that, okay, this is going to hurt, and you're going to cry. But, of course, that didn't happen, right, Karen? We didn't. I mean,
that's
we cried.
Right.
Nobody ever saw it. And I can't believe
how Karen, how hard was it for you being in New Jersey and also having a bunch of attitude guys around you? Sure. And one more thing. Both of you guys were gorgeous, and I'm not flirting with you. I mean, you're my friend. But I've seen young pictures of you when you guys were very young, and you were very, very pretty, both of you guys were. I know that played a part, too. But how tough was it, Karen?
It was pretty tough sometimes. There was a lot of, sexual innuendo sometimes, you know. But also, I never had better people that would go to bat for me. I was the little girl. I was the sister of the group, and nobody better hurt me. But there were also some people who thought it was a lot of fun to kind of signal me out. And like Darlene was just saying, they really hurt. I mean, they would throw us around like we were chew toys, and because they couldn't let a girl beat them. And so we got beat up pretty much, oh, 2 or 3 times a week, right, Dar? It got tough.
Right.
It got tough sometimes.
In my research, I found out a couple things, one particularly on Chihan Darlene McPherson-Pegels. She was the only person, and I don't think any males. I know one person didn't fight anymore because of equipment, because she just didn't like the equipment. But Chihan Darlene, I believe she is the only person I know of who had a career who fought bare knuckle in the early years when women were fighting men and different weight conditions and so forth, and then retired when equipment was invented.
Wow.
So
yeah.
That's pretty cool. Tell me about that, Chihan.
Yeah.
The bare knuckle fighting in the early days.
Well, sometimes we would wrap our hands and our feet. It depended on how many little bones you thought were broken in there. You know, you'd have to wrap your fingers together or your toes together. But I guess it was the time frame. I remember hearing about this equipment that Yun Ri had invented, and that we were going to be getting it, and it was going to be showing up in tournaments and that sort of thing. But I had my last tournament fight before the sparring gear was ever required in tournaments.
That's pretty cool, huh? Just to have that saying that you said that. Now, Chihan, Karen, you on the other hand, you know, became a competitor animal, and some of some of the listeners that are listening to this, you're not only a history general, lifetime history general for the Sport Card Museum Archives. You have the Living Legends Award, the referee certification in Federation of Interstate Tournaments, United Martial Arts Referees Association, a member, a Professional Karate League certified referee. You have a Woman of the Year with the 1992 PKL League. You have a Living Legend Award from Chihan Robert Everhart. What an honor. Action Martial Arts Hall of Fame, World Union of Karate Fame. You're presently serving on the board of directors on the National Qigong Association, Secretary of Red Scorpion Society, member of the Black Dragon Fighting Society. You've done something also that I want to mention that's pretty impressive. You inherited a system. Tell me a little about that.
My Sifu was taught by a man from New York. His name was Chong Xiaoling, and he passed his system on to my teacher. And my teacher then taught it sporadically for a while, and then he and I opened a school together, and he developed liver disease about 3 or 4 years into it. And he said that when he passed on, I had to continue passing on and teaching the arts of Chinese martial arts. And so he gave me his system, and he named me his inheritor, or his Sihing. And then when he passed, I became the Sifu of the school, of the system.
See, yes, you know, that is not only super cool, but that really, it says a lot about your humbleness. Because all this time that I've known you as a master of Karate Do in your history. I noticed that you taught Tai Chi, and I know that you're a master instructor, but I didn't realize that you had inherited a total system, and to make you not only the grand master of that system, but someone to carry on the lineage. That's pretty cool. On Chihan Darlene's point, I've got to say something. She had competed probably in 20 or 30 years. I might be estimating, but I talked her into competing a couple of years ago for a state title, and she came out and she won. So what was it like, that pressure
you got
that
it.
I put on that I put on you to compete with all those young people or compete in a tournament that you never hadn't competed in and to win it? What'd you go through? What'd your mindset go through?
Well, I think the biggest thing was I didn't want to let any of my students down. I didn't want to let you down. And Master Peter Hill had also encouraged me to compete. When I mentioned to him that you wanted me to step out and enter that tournament, he said, well, I think that you know, that's an awesome thing and you should do it. He said, I really think you should. And I thought, man, if I go out there and I blow this whole thing, then I'm going to be letting a lot of people down. And then, you know, the thing that came to me just the week before the tournament was that I didn't think, no matter what happened, I wasn't going to let anybody down, because here I was at 65 entering stepping on that mat again, you know, getting out there. And
right.
And so how could I have let anybody down? I mean, just to say that I did it, that I was willing to put myself out there. And
right. You know, Cynthia Karen, you won actually the PKL woman. How do you, I mean, that was a tremendous honor, and you had to be everywhere. What was it like, your competition days, to step out on the mat and do what you did, the pressure that you went through?
Oh, it was intense. We were
incredible competitors you had to go against.
Oh, yeah. And they broke us up into regions. And so
okay.
I was region 10 or region 11. And so they would rate us according to region, and then they would take those regional ratings and make a national rating. So the more you competed and won, or at least placed, the more chances you had of being nationally rated. And that's what I wanted. I kind of set my mind that I wanted to be nationally rated, because I was teaching a lot of young students. And to me, you have to walk your talk. So I wanted to show them what it was like and what it took. You know, if you want something bad enough, you have to do the work. And I just made it my goal. And when we opened the Kung Fu school, I wanted to make my teacher's new school proud. I wanted him to be proud of us. So it was a lot of personal goals, but it also was, I knew what I was up against, and it was just important to me to show up and do the best I could, because my daughters were watching, my husband was watching, my students. It was a real kind of a...
Well, your daughter was rated also, correct? In my
yes,
research,
she was,
your daughter was rated also. I remember that. Cool.
She was,
well, you know,
two,
hey,
I'm
going to... yes, okay. I'm going to go on to the Kung Fu thing in a moment. But I'm still in karate mode, guys, okay? I'm still in the park of those videos. But I want to go back to Shihan Darlene, and I want to talk about after the karate bare-knuckle days, you end up in Georgia, and you end up training with someone who we are, you know, he's my mentor. He's an incredible man, true historian to sport karate and to the world. This is Joe Corley. You trained at the Peachtree Studio. Yeah, tell me a little bit about that, because Mr. Corley might be listening and make you smile a little bit.
Well, one way I can make him smile is by saying he probably wouldn't recognize me. He wouldn't know me if I walked up to him. But I moved to Georgia, to the Atlanta area, for work. I'm also an engineer, and there was a good job there that would help me further my career. And so I started looking around for schools, and all of a sudden it dawned on me. It's like, oh, wow, you know, I can find Joe Corley's studio, and I can go and train, you know, with the best of the best. And because he had never met me, and I had never met him. I had seen him at tournaments, but he didn't know who I was. You know, I was just some skinny little black belt, and I was still a first degree black belt at that time. I was in my early 20s, and so I drove down Peachtree Street to his studio and went in. And one funny thing I remember about those days is I think the year might have been like 1978, and it was maybe like the second time I had gone down there to class, and I was working out with a couple of his black belts, and they were criticizing my kata and my form and everything that I was doing. You know, everything was wrong. It's all wrong. And so I was standing in a horse stance, and Mr. Corley comes out of his office, and he yells out there, and he says, hey, anybody out here speak French? And without even thinking about it, I turned around and I said, how long do I have to learn? Because I was so in awe of this man. You know, if he wants me to speak French, I'll speak French, you know. And it turns out that this is just before he went to Europe for that big fight that they had in Europe. Do you remember? Was that 1978?
Was that with Mr. Valera? I'm thinking about Mr. Valera. That's cool. That's really cool. What a cool story.
Yeah, but I'll learn. You know, if you want me to speak French, I'll stand in this horse stance and learn to speak French.
Well, cool. And now, Miss Karen, Sister Karen, you and I have something in common, not just through the Black Dragon Fly Society, but we have a man that we have something in common. I'll just set up the listeners. 19 years ago, I get a phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning. And it's someone that doesn't, you can't tell by the voice it was. In fact, no, I have to do it. It was really weird. And he goes, like, just like that, he goes, I like this, you can carry me. And I didn't know who it was. 2 o'clock in the morning, I thought it was a joke that someone played a joke on me. And they were just calling me at 2 o'clock in the morning to see if I'm still working. It turned out to be Peter Urban, Maestro Peter Urban. And he had heard what I was doing with the Sport Clock Museum through Gary Alexander and some other people. And he called me at 2 o'clock in the morning. And he promised a box of stuff. And, of course, we lost him. And that's such a sad point to lose such a great man as Peter Urban. But a few weeks later, a UPS truck pulled out, and it was a box of personal stuff from Peter Urban's memoirs, of the Dojo book that was autographed to me, personal items. And so Mr. Urban, through his students or someone, kept his word and started off the box with the Sport Carter Museum Archives. And rest in peace, Mr. Urban. But you were close to him, and you sent me something this year that made me cry, made me laugh, made me excited. I wrote about it, wrote an article about it. And I want you to tell me about that. And tell me your relationship with Maestro Peter Urban, the first self-proclaimed 10th-degree black belt in the United States because the Japanese refused to give him a 10th dan, so he came back to America and proclaimed to be a 10th dan in Goju, which forms American Goju, and I believe Nishi Goju formed from there. I mean, it was just an amazing journey that happened. But tell me, Sister Karen, your relationship with Peter Urban.
He was an incredible human being. I met him when I was still helping to run my teacher, Sensei Flaherty, had a school. We were a Shorinru, and we were a full contact fighting school. And Jim was a Marine, and he was running the school, but he's also, they were gearing up for the Gulf War. And so I was working for a printer during the day and teaching at night. And a friend of mine who was a part of the Yasaga group called me and said, Grandmaster Urban needs someone to introduce him to a printer who will take the time to print his book for him. And he has it half written, and he wants to meet a printer that's not one of the big corporation printers, just a small local guy. Would you mind coming over and meeting him and talking to him? Of course. Of course. I went over and we met, and he was showing me what he wanted done, and we became friends that afternoon because I stayed like 5 hours just talking to him. He was a fantastic man. What a mind. And our friendship grew as the book grew, and when he was ready to have it printed, I took him to meet my boss, and they made arrangements, and that was the book of Goju that he had. And then he wrote another book. And he asked me to write some of it, to write a page in it. And he had a lot of other people submitting articles to him. So he and I worked together. And I also became he used to call me his Sancho Panza. He was the man of La Mancha, and I was his Sancho Panza. I helped him out what he needed. We became very close because he had no one to drive him to the doctors, no one to take him for grocery shopping. And I would bring him to my house on weekends. My family loved him. We had a good time. And we became very close friends. And when the Gulf War did hit, my teacher had to go. He was a Marine, and he left, and he threw me the keys, and he said, it's your school now. And I told Grandmaster Urban that, and he said, well, then I will help. I will teach two nights a week for you. I said, really?
Wow.
I said, but you're, you know, wow. I'm so stupid. I said, you're Goju, we're Shore and Rue. And he just started laughing. He said, believe me, they'll come.
Right.
Well, tell me about the luggage. Tell me about the luggage.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So he did teach for about 3 months for me in my school, and I would go and get him. And one day I was going, taking him somewhere, and he walked out the door. He had then finished his second book, the autobiography of
right.
the sensei. And he had this suitcase with him. And when we were getting to the car, he threw it in the dumpster. And I said, that suitcase is cool. It says Grandmaster Peter Urban Chinatown Dojo. I said, you can't just throw that away. And he said, I don't want it anymore. And I said, can I have it? And he said, do you want it? And I climbed in the dumpster and pulled it out, and it was heavy. I put it in my trunk, and when I got home, I opened it up, and here it's all the originals for his two books, The Book of Goju and The Autobiography of the Sensei.
Yeah.
And I had to wait 37 years to find Gary.
Amen.
And I said to him, I have something. And when I finally got up in the attic and I found the suitcase, I couldn't wait to call you. Remember, I was like, you've got to call me back.
Yeah.
I found a treasure. Send it over to you because
I
that's
drool.
Where it belongs.
I so drool. It's incredible. That's an incredible story right there, your relationship with Mr. Urban. And
I loved him.
You know, I'm going to stop the part one right now, and we're going to pay some bills. So stay tuned for part two, and we'll do the Legends Name Game and ask the yin-yang question and talk a little bit more about the incredible history that you ladies brought to the table. I hope everyone's listening and having a good time. Now, if you want to call in and talk to these ladies at the end of the show, at number 657-383-1410, I know they would love to talk to anybody that would be part of that history or be part of understanding and wanting to know more about women martial arts and what they contributed to the beginning part of that. I'd like to mention some of our upcoming shows. February 7th, which is our next show, we'll be interviewing the great Willie Hicks for 2015-2016. His team impacts, and particularly himself, has been one of the top 10 point fighters probably in the world, probably some top 5, top 10 point fighters out of the top 10. He'll be on the air with us next week, February 7th, in 2 weeks. February 21st, we have Colonel Phil Torres, retired Marine, hero, legendary competitor, trained in Okinawa, just an amazing individual, and his history will really be interesting in talking about what he's contributed to American martial arts. February 28th is going to be one of my highlight interviews with my first American karate instructor, Mr. Sam Chapman from Greenville, South Carolina, or Fountain Inn, South Carolina. He's an American karate legend, pioneer fighter, and he adopted me when I was very young from Hawaii. March 7th, you got Don DeVries and Mr. Richard J. McClain, pioneers and legends and the producers of the Bill Wallace Superfoot World Championships in Cleveland, Ohio. And this is going to be March the 31st and April 1st, and their interview is going to be talking about what they're doing for us this year. Last year was an incredible event. We brought in all the class material and all the top black belts in the surrounding area. Of course, Bill's tournament was superior. And also, you got to think that through the years, hundreds of people probably have tried to approach Bill to say, well, I can put a tournament and put your name on it. But, you know, Bill chose these two guys because these guys are pretty cool. I've known Don DeVries for over 30 years, and Richard McClain is a real martial artist, and they care about producing with someone's name like Bill Superfoot Wall. So mark that on your calendar, March 31st and April 1st in Cleveland, Ohio. March the 14th, I've got an incredible show with another lady pioneer in martial arts, Mrs. Mikey Rowe Moore, who just came from the Action Martial Arts event, where she was honored. And, you know, a lady like Mikey can never get too many honors. she could never get too many thank yous. She was the first arbitrator that Ed Parker chose to be a woman arbitrator for the Long Beach Internationals. She instrumented with a few other ladies, ladies point karate in California and traveled around the country fighting. So her interview is going to be very, very interesting and fun. March the 21st, we're going to do halfway through with Jeff Goss. He's a super producer of the Grand Slam Open Indale Premier event. He has grown up in sport karate. He's also a history general. And he has done something that no competitor has ever done. And we have him on a live interview. He has won Super Grands, overall world championships, 5 times. I don't think anybody's going to ever beat that. Jeff Doss will be here on our program. And we'll end out March with a great interview with Heartless Jim Hartley, with his special guest, fighting Irishman Jim Anderson, land baron, pioneer, and producer. This is all about the Jim Harrison lineage and his supporters. Heartless was one of his fighters, and that was his name. And Jim will be remembered in the heyday of Mr. Harrison and what they did as far as training fighters and building up the secure martial arts, and that's March the 28th. I want to go right into our emails, and we have two tonight. This one's from Abby Fitzberg from Antigo, Wisconsin. I believe I said that right. Antigo, Wisconsin, I looked at it. It was a small little town in Wisconsin near Canada, and they do martial arts up there, I guess, and their question was, what's the most influential events in the 60s for sport karate? Well, my research tells me it was definitely Long Beach Internationals, Ed Parker's event, Mr. Alan Steen, United States Championships in Dallas, Texas, Mr. George Minshew's Karate Olympics, definitely the USKA Nationals, Henry Cho's event in New York, and a gentleman in New York who we lost a few years back, but he put on a world martial arts event. His name was Aaron Banks. In the 70s, it added some of those tournaments, but then, of course, the Battle of Atlanta came into fruition and some other great tournaments. But in the 60s, it was Long Beach, U.S. Championships, Karate Olympics, USK Nationals, Henry Cho's event, and Aaron Banks' World Martial Arts event. The neat thing about Mr. Banks, just to mention, he would put karate versus boxing, boxing versus kung fu, karate versus tai chi. It'd be interesting. And he emerged a lot of great fighters. I hope that answered your question, Abby, and we appreciate you sending us an email. From Tom Borland, Dallas, Texas, down the street, 500 miles away, but down the street, Dallas, Texas. The question is, the martial arts history of who recorded it. Who was responsible for the early writings? Well, you know, there's so many people that did give and write history of the martial arts, and there's a few of us who are recording it and keeping it in front of our space. To emphasize, I only concentrate here at the Sport Karate Museum Archives on sport karate. There are other groups who concentrate on other things of the martial arts, and they are doing a fantastic job. But going back to the question, the history, I believe, was recorded, first of all, by a gentleman named Hayamoto Musashi. He's well known, and his writings and sayings were very, very impressive from the Book of Five Rings. Going into more reality in the 60s, 50s, 50s probably, maybe even the late 40s, there's a gentleman named Bruce Tegner, and his most known book was the Book of Self-Defense, which he incorporated judo, jiu-jitsu, and a touch of karate before anybody even knew what the word, and guys weren't even in Okinawa yet, learning Okinawa Ishinu yet. It was way before the time. And then, of course, in the 70s, the person that comes to my mind immediately is Richard Kim. And then in the late 70s, 80s, and 90s, the great John Corcoran and Emil Farkas, who taught Shotokan in North Hollywood, got together, and they formed a blue book that pretty much documented everything there was in sport karate, and very, very impressive. And then there was the Red Book of Official Karate, and that covered the early years. Karen, Sheehan, Darlene, did I cover that? Did you have anybody else that you know that recorded history?
I know that the early history back at the beginning was not really recorded, and even when I began up until I guess sometime in the 80s or 90s, we weren't even allowed to write anything down. You had to remember it. You couldn't make notes in class. You couldn't draw diagrams of katas. You had to memorize it, and then it was your job as you made rank to pass it on verbally to the students. It's just in recent times that martial arts information has been recorded. And so I think you've covered it quite well, Professor.
Okay. How about you, Karen? You got anybody to add?
Yes. Sheehan Gary Alexander from North Jersey is known to be the great historian for the Okinawan arts. He was an Ishinrusai. He is an Ishinrusai.
Yeah.
But he also...
He gets credit also. Him and Pat Burleson, they have a little argument. Who won the first national karate championship? I know he won Kyokushin Kai, that national championship, and Pat won the Jun Li national championship. I don't know who won first, so it's interesting if I can find that out. Do you know?
I can find out.
I bet you could. Hey, one more thing. You got me thinking, Sheehan, darling. Karen and I were talking about this the other day. Do you remember when we used to have dye parties? Because you couldn't buy the belts. You had to dye the belts except for black belt, because that was a hand-me-down.
Oh, yeah.
You have green, blind, the green belts, the orange belts, the yellow belts. Remember that?
Right, and cover them over. You know, you take your white belt and you take a piece of fabric and cover it over for the new color. I remember that, too. Yeah, did you ever do that?
That's cool.
Yeah, well, maybe that was a Korean thing.
Tom Borlin from Dallas, Texas. We hope you answered your question. But she comes on in and Sophie Karen. And before I get to the ladies, I'd like to do the part that everyone, they like. They send me emails and say they like it. It's the artifacts part. And I think going to the third part, you understand that we're collecting quite a cool group of stuff. Pretty amazing when you think about it. So I'm going to go this as quick as I can, but not really, because I want everyone to understand that, and I talked to someone about this today, it doesn't matter if it's a piece of paper, if it's a rock, if it's a sword. As long as you knew where it came from and the heart that gave it to you, then you accept it and you treat it as if you own it. And that came from a gentleman named Miyamoto Musashi. That was his saying. So with that said, here are the artifacts, ongoing list of what we collect. There's slow, accurate, and memorable, no beginning, no end, the journey goes on. The heart of the museum is Zing Li's belt that he gave to Master Alan Steen. He gave it to Mike Stone, he wore it. Of course, he gave it to J. Pat Burleson, he wore it. Gave it to Mr. Harrison, and he wore it. And then Mr. Harrison actually passed it down to of the museum and myself. Danny Lane signed uniform autograph pictures of him and Mr. Norris. Signed Chuck Norris black belt, donated by Mr. Don Rodriguez. Mike Stone signed blue top uniform. A signed picture of Dan the Beast Severin. Signed pictures of the world champion Troy Dorsey. Monster Man Ever Eddie's robe, Detroit patch, and pictures. Charlotte Hoffman's Emerson Spice's old Texas Park karate pictures. We got the original Enter of the Dragon movie patch that's actually signed by Bob Wall. We have an autographed Jeff Smith Stars and Stripes uniform top that he gave me personally at the Black Belt Festival. We have the Lost Shows and Legends of Mr. Jim Harrison from his famous TV tournament that he did. And going into the third part, that I won't skip through the first and two like I just did, but here's the third part. 1993 NBA World Championship breaking plaque and ring. James Toney signed uniform and the original safety punch given to him by Mr. Gene Reed. We have Mr. Darrell K. Stewart signed uniform. We have a signed Gina Bell Peak Judo uniform. Carol Hills is back, signed gear and D-top. Original signed book by Nick Sirio and Nancy Sirio. We have Karen Thatcher, Black D-top and Hall of Fame award. Rocky DiRico's personal package. Christine Bannon Rodriguez's uniform top. Oh, wow. Ronnie McKee's Korean Tiger fighting jacket. Signed Allison family tree. Wow. Ned Parker, rest in peace, Ed, family tree. Joshua Sanai signed former karate uniform. This is James Cook signed D-top and handmade guitar that he made for the museum. Linda Pugliese signed D-top. This is Dwayne Etherden's collection of black belt official karate and karate illustrated magazines from the 60s and 70s, over 100. Mr. Mike McNamara signed pictures and hoodies and gold medal from the Police Olympics. Mr. Roddy Kirby signed pictures, uniform top, hats and poster. Mr. Steve Pitcher, rest in peace, signed picture of his karate illustrated magazine. And the last one on this list, the bullet used by Mr. Chuck Norris to shoot J. Pat Bellison on the Walker Texas Ranger series. I'm really proud of that. Yeah, I do. I have that. I know. Let's go back to my girls. We play a game every year, or every show, and it's a fun game. I mention a name, and you give me 30 seconds or 2 to 3 sentences about what you feel about that person. And I'm going to go ping-pong back and forth. I'm going to do Shehan Karen first, and then I'll say one to Shehan Darlene. So, Shehan, I mean, Sippy Karen, you ready?
Yes.
First one, Nick Sirio.
Good kung fu. He was a good teacher, and he could run a tournament. He made things snap, and he was a nice man. He was a very nice man, but he took no prisoners. If the tournament wasn't running well, whew, he could crack a whip. And he and Glenn Hart had a great business together with the PKL.
That's going to be in a minute. How about Shehan Darlene, Gerald Giles?
Oh, Gerald, tough, strong, aggressive fighter, very, very nice man, very set in his ways, but he was one of the toughest fighters I've ever seen.
Okay, sit through Karen. How about Glenn Hart?
Glenn Hart was one of the nicest men I ever had to work with. We were part of the PKL group, Sifu Pete and I, and he helped us, he mentored us into building up a AAA tournament. And always there, ready to talk. Nice man, very supportive.
Now, Shehan Darlene, the first Pink and Black, the first year, you didn't make it, but the second year we honored you, you got to meet some incredible people. One of the ladies you met, Mikey Will Moore. What do you think of her?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, well, you know, I had heard of her for, you know, since I was, like, back in the early 70s, I had heard of Mikey. She's a pistol. She's a great lady. She's a no-nonsense, I'm going to tell you what I think, and you're going to stand there and listen to it kind of a person. But she's got a heart of gold.
Cool. Sipu, Christina Bannon Rodriguez.
Oh, Christina Bannon Rodriguez. I think the best word to describe her is smooth. When she was competing with the Atlantic team, she walked out into the ring and she would begin, and she had a flow about her that was just, I had to stop whatever I was doing, and I was always judging at those, and I would stop and just watch her because she moved so beautifully. She had such great energy, and I love talent, and she was a great talent back then.
Super. I got one for you, Shehan Darlene, someone new in your life, but we'll ask you to say a few words about him. Garrett Lee. I know you went to Ireland this year to watch him fight. What do you think about Garrett Lee?
Garrett Lee is my favorite fighter, and he is a fantastic instructor. He's as he grows older and matures, he's going to be taking the baton from you, I think. But he is.
Oh, he already has.
He is a very nice person. Not to mention that his karate is crisp and clean, traditional combined with the new modern sport karate. He's just just well rounded.
He stays out there in Anahuac with you in a trailer, lives next to the dojo, so he's
right.
A 24-7 karate guy. Yeah.
I should say short fuse. I keep telling him he needs a longer fuse.
Okay. Sifu, I got one more for you. Bruce Lee.
I don't care what anyone says, you like him or not, he changed everything for all of us coming up. He was a great actor, and he knew his art, and he was passionate about what he was doing. And he opened the doors to his school to the American people, and he paid the price for it. And, yeah, he had some ego things going, but his movies changed us. Everyone began to ki-ai like him and high kicking. We never saw kicking like that before until his character that he would bring to the screen was unbelievable. We owe him a lot.
Well, yeah. I appreciate you sharing your legend's name. I got one more for you, Shihun Darlene. Someone that's very special to me and the museum. He was my karate angel this year, the award that we gave out to the museum. He's very close to you. You can tell me a little about him. He plays an important part in a lot of things that we circle that school around. And that's Mark Pegels. Tell me a little about what Mark is to you. He is.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, he's been hanging around for 30 years now. Yeah, Mark Pegels. Mark Pegels is my husband, and he is a guy who is just going to give and give and give. He knows every one of the students in the dojo. He takes time with.
An important part in the things that school is based upon. Tell me about what you have him every test. He does something very special in every test. And
right.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Our school is based on Christian foundation, Christian principles. And before we compete at a tournament, we get together, and if Mark is there, and he usually is, he has prayer with everybody in a huddle. Before we have a testing, he prays for everyone, and that's where we start our testings with prayer. And not only that, but Mark he comes in every chance he gets, and he's always there for the students or for the younger people, the parents. We have a lot of parents that will sit in the lobby and wait for their kids, and he's there for them if they need to talk, if they've got problems. And, he's just like everybody. You say he's your guardian angel. He's like everybody's guardian angel. He's everybody's karate angel. And he helps us remember those foundational principles that we built our school on.
Very good. So that covers the Legends name game, and I appreciate you ladies taking the time to talk about some of the people that have influenced your life. this has been really a lot of fun. I do want to ask you a direct question, though. I know this year, and Karen's came 1 year before, but this year we're doing our 25th anniversary of the Living Legends Celebrity Roast, where we're roasting Mr. Minshew, and special guest, Mr. Steve Parks, and special speaker, Mr. Roy D. Kirvin. I'd like to talk Karen to come in and do her Tai Chi seminar, and Sufi Darlene doing her Tai Chi, and maybe work together. So with that, next question, when you guys transferred from your karate do and your attitude of karate, which I know very deeply, and you went to soft style, what was the major change you had to do? What was the adjustment? Sifu Darlene, you go first.
Well, I never really felt like I was transferring or leaving anything behind. I wanted to incorporate it all together, and that's another foundational principle of my school. That's one of the reasons why I studied with Master Peter Hill, because he recognized the fact that I had good karate foundation, and he never told me, no, you have to leave that. He said, okay, this is how you've learned to do things in karate. Now, take that, use that, but incorporate this Tai Chi and this Kung Fu with what you're doing with your karate. He helped me learn to blend it all together. And the transition is still happening, if there is a transition, but I'm not leaving anything behind. I want to incorporate it all together.
Simply Karen, your transition. Of course, you inherited
when
the system.
When I made the
teaching,
transition.
And I'll tell you something before you tell me something. I had a call tonight, and I'll tell you about it more privately, but I won't go and share it with you. It was someone who loved you and concerned with you that maybe we didn't put a title in front of your name. And that was an accident done by myself and the producers because I didn't emphasize it. And I explained to her in detail that it would never happen again, and I understood why it was important. But my point is this, is that you deserve that title. You've earned that title. And especially now, one thing that stays with me is that she told me a story of a young man that trained with someone else but came back and said, well, that's good. I'm sure he's very good, but I'm not going to train in Tai Chi unless I train with Karen. So what a compliment. What a compliment.
Wow.
And
wow.
You are a master instructor in Tai Chi. And for someone to call me up and share that with me before you're shutting your light, I thought that was very, very, very cool.
Wow.
But what was it now teaching Tai Chi instead of karate? Tell me that.
Well, I came from Shorinru, and Shorinru is a hard style, and it's a very rooted hard style. And I went into Chinese boxing, which was hard and soft. But the teaching in that was that you stayed relaxed until the very end of the technique, and then full power would come out. So the thing that my teacher had the worst time with me was getting me to relax, getting my arms to not be tight all the time. And when I would do a Tai Chi move, he would come by and he would actually break something over my arm and say, this can't happen. You have to relax. Come on, karate girl, relax. And it took me a long time to not have that tension in my arms and my legs. And it made such a difference. When I went back and would do a Shorinru form after that, the power was triple that it was before I learned the Taiji. It's that important, but it was a hard lesson. It's a habit of staying tense and ready with the karate form.
I've got a story that will back that up. I won't mention the date and time, but it was late 60s. It was at a Kung Fu Kwan on King Street in Chinatown, and it was Si Lan Pai, which is all the animal styles of Kung Fu. And
sure. There
was a few women in that studio. This particular one was a Tai Chi instructor and a Kung Fu student. And when I got there, I didn't like Kung Fu. I didn't enjoy the slow movement. And I just didn't like working out there. But finally, he would never let me fight for the first 4 or 5 weeks. Finally, one day, I guess I got on his nerve, and he put me in line. But he put that girl in front of me. That I think she's like 20 years old. And she'd been doing Tai Chi ever since I've been there. And I didn't respect that at all. I thought that there's no way I'm going to fight this girl. And I'm not going to fight a girl. And I kind of argued with him. And you don't argue with a sister, especially at his quote. And he insisted I spar her. So I got mad. You know, where I was young black belt, I got emotional, and I was going to hurt her. And when I woke up with smelling sauce, I had an instant respect for Kung Fu. I had an instant respect for women. I had an instant respect for things I didn't understand, and I had an instant respect for that spinning wheel kick which I never saw. And that was a perfect example of arrogant black belt thinking that all martial arts is different. It's really the same. They're trained accurately. So have you ever seen anybody get knocked out before with kung fu?
Oh, fun, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, okay, I'm gonna end the conversation and this interview with a really cool question, and I'm going to ask you both the same question, and you need to answer it too. I call it the soft sell. But before I ask that last question, I know that Xiong Daoling, you do something very special besides teach karate. You're actually a co-founder and owner of an engineering company. How'd you get involved with that?
Well, I started out as a drafter on the board. I mean, before we had computers, and I decided to go back to college. And you know, I had some college education, but I decided to go back and finish and get the degree, and ended up with more than one. But my dad had always told me it's always better to work for yourself than someone else. So as soon as I could, I got my own company going, and now it's really pleasant. You know, it clips along at a nice pace, but I'm not too overloaded, and not, you know, there's the workload is pretty much just right. But I love it. It's like, to me, engineering is a giant puzzle, and I have two buildings here. One is the engineering company on one side, then there's a little courtyard, and then the other side's the dojo. So it's perfect.
Karen, did you ever do a real job?
A real job.
My job was I opened my own healing institute, and I teach Tai Chi and Qigong, and I also teach energy healing. And I've dedicated the rest of my time here in the Earth School to teaching people how to heal their students and themselves and their families, their animals, through the hard work of Qigong and Tai Chi, getting the flow, learning how to do it, and then transmitting it through healing. That's what I do.
Wow.
Karen, you do Reiki also, don't you?
Yes, I do Reiki. I do integrated energy therapy, Karuna Reiki, and Qigong healing. My teacher is Sifu Kenneth Cohen. I train with Sifu Kenneth Cohen.
You are an amazing person.
Well, thank you. Yes. Who are you? I'm not an engineer.
Well, this goes to add to my resume that I am the best middleman in America putting people together. So I expect you guys to talk to each other avidly after this interview and become dear friends. Okay?
Oh, sure.
I got two questions left, the yin-yang question, and then this is my favorite question. You guys are the lifetime members of the History Generals of the Sport Karate Museum. How important is it to keep the history alive and to do what we do, this radio program, the blog site, all the Twitter accounts, the Facebook accounts? How important is it? And Xiong, I'll let you go first, and then sit there after. Xiong?
Well, Professor, I think that sometimes in our schools we get too far away from our roots. We wander, hopefully not here in my school and not in Karen's, but people start to wander away from what martial arts really is, and that it is that we are training people to be warriors from within, and we're not teaching people to fight. That's not what it's about. And if we lose the history of sport karate, if we lose the history of all these people who've gone before, then we're not going to have an anchor. We're not going to have anything that's going to keep us rooted. And as Karen will agree with me, one of the things, the first things you learn in Tai Chi or in energy work is that rooting is what's the basic, the foundation. And without your foundation, your house is going to fall. And if we don't have the Sport Karate Museum and the history, our house is going to fall. We have to preserve it.
Okay, Tiffany Karen, your turn.
Wow. Well, she's absolutely right. And we all have this rich history, and we tell these wonderful stories of training with some of these masters, and we have things from them that we have gotten over the years, like suitcases with the papers in them and pictures and things that are very near and dear to us. But when you told me that there are you have run into young people who don't know who Chuck Norris is, that's just wrong. And that's part of the family of the martial arts, is knowing our grandparents, knowing our lineage. And a lot of the old Chinese movies tell the stories of the villages. My dear friend Bryant and I used to sit and eat ramen noodles and watch these and learn the history of the different dynasties. And we loved it. We enjoyed it. And we have to pass on the love of the history to the kids coming up, because they're different. Children are different now. And it takes time to find the history. So knowing that there's a place where they can come and see these artifacts, these wonderful treasures that people give you gladly, we all want to give to you, because it has to keep going. And like my teacher used to say, if you didn't write it down, it never happened. And that's true. I mean, if we don't preserve this stuff and we just talk about it, in 20 years it's gone. The memories are gone.
Well, thank you so much, and those are great answers. So with that said, the last question, I'm going to leave off the yin, because I know what both of you guys would do if someone walked in very cordially and wanted to learn martial arts. I know your heart. I know you are a master instructor. So I'm going to ask you the yang question, and that's if someone walks in with disrespect, say it's pouring rain outside and they got muddy shoes on, they see you working out in the middle of the floor, and they walk on the floor, and they say, hey, you with that kung fu uniform on. I want to learn martial arts. I want to cry. I want to learn kung fu. I don't care. I just want to beat up somebody. How would you handle someone like that? And Soft Cell Karate 2017, how would you handle somebody like that, Shihan?
Well, first of all, I probably wouldn't let them get all the way to the middle of the floor with their shoes on. But
okay.
I think I would say, this is not the place where you're going to learn to fight. This is the place where you're going to learn how to not fight. And we teach sport karate, which is something you do at tournaments. And we teach self-defense, which you use to protect yourself and your loved ones. But we don't teach people to go out on the street and fight. And here's the mop, now clean the floor.
Amen.
Good answer. Tiffany Karen, how would you handle someone belligerent like that?
Well, the first thing I would I would stop the class immediately. I would immediately stop the class and have everyone stare at him. I would turn the class over to my top student, and then I would escort him outside and explain to him that he behaved inappropriately, and invite him back tomorrow or the next time I was there, either before class or after class. But he was not welcome in my school until he prepared himself and entered with respect, and then I would just lock the door behind me. He'd be outside.
Well, good answer. Look, guys, I love you. You know that. And much mahalo. So if Auntie Bowen is there, or if anybody on the line to ask a question to talk to you, we'd love to talk to you and hear from you. Auntie Bowen, are you there?
Yes, I am, sir. It's a great, informative program that we have on tonight. And so, I'm going to unmute all the lines. So, if anyone would like to ask a question, then this is a great time to do that.
It sounds like Peter Urban's voice. In
all the lines are unmuted.
Hi, you're on the air with Master Legends and High Time. Who's this?
Hello, ladies.
Hi, you're in the air. Hi, you're on the air with Icons and Icons and Icons. Well, I guess we're having a little something to
quit. That's me.
Hi, Mikey. It's Karen.
Mikey Rose.
Hi, Karen.
How are you?
I'm great. Good. Excellent interview tonight, ladies. I loved it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mikey.
You know what, Mikey? I'm going to make you a permanent co-host because you call in all the time.
Guys, what would help if there's someone on the call but has their computer on, they need to turn the volume down. That's the interference.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello, yeah, this is Brian, hello?
Oh.
Hi, yeah, first of all, sir,
I just want to let you know that you're doing an awesome job, Cecily. You know, you're doing an awesome job with the whole museum. It is so great for you to do something like that and put all this information together.
Who is this, please?
This is Brian Harrell. I'm one of the preparing students.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm doing fine, sir. And once again, thank you so much for having these awesome ladies on. You know, it's such a blessing. It's such a blessing and everything that for you to put these ladies on. And I heard the question earlier about, you know, who's writing the history down. Well, Professor Lee, you're making history too. You're making history by what you're doing with the you're making history by what you're doing with the museum. You know, you're leaving a lot of wealth and a lot of knowledge and everything for up and coming students. And I just want to give kudos and everything to my teacher for doing an awesome job and everything. She's a pioneer in the martial arts and everything. And my wife is sitting right next to me too. She's a martial artist, and Sheehan, once again, you two are just being such an inspiration. You and Karen are such an inspiration to, you know, my own wife as a female in the martial arts, and I thank you so much.
Wow,
and Grandmaster and Professor Lee, with his pink and black, man, you hit it out of the park with that. Yes.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes, you hit it out of the park with that. It's such a blessing and everything. It's such a blessing to train under a remarkable young lady. You know, as you see from Karen, my wife and I were both students of hers for many years, and she pours. She pours, and Sheehan, you hit it right on point. You know, see from Karen, she actually pours into her students, and I want to continue to pass that on. I want to be able one day to take my students and everything to Texas, to the Hall of Fame, and say, hey, this is where your lineage comes from. Not only just showing you the kung fu and the karate and all the techniques you showed me, but actually show all the history and everything of all the martial arts before her and show what it was all about. So, and you're making history right now, Professor, by having this interview. You're making history right now and everything by doing this and everything and highlighting these women in the martial arts. You know, a lot of times women get in the background and everything, and I had so many female teachers that taught me martial arts and kept me up the streets in trouble, Patterson, New Jersey. And I tell you, as I grew up and went to the military and joined the military and got out, and I met Tifu Karen, and she actually introduced me to Peter Urban. I'm a former sailor, and during that time when she was with Peter Urban, I had a little chance to sit with him. And here I am, a sailor, sitting with another sailor, you know, in his house with Peter Urban, in his house, you know, eating soup. Man, it was awesome.
Wow.
And learning history. So people are blessed with that, you know.
Yes. That story, and I hope you enjoyed the story about Peter Urban and Karen and I talking about him. Thank you so much for calling. Anybody else on the line?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you, Brian.
I don't know what that background noise is. I hope we can edit that out. But, you know, Hansi Dolan is an amazing man for the computer. So, okay, anybody else on the line? If not, we're going to wrap the show up. Okay, very good. Hansi Dolan, any last words?
Well, I think that to sort of summarize a lot of the things that we've actually been doing the past week, I was in New Jersey for the Action Martial Arts Hall of Honors and the Expo, and that was a great experience. Who's Who in the Martial Arts has been moving along now for 4 months, and it truly feels like it's been longer. But the response that we've been getting, and the radio show, and all the things that we've been doing to enhance the martial arts, we received an award through the Action Martial Arts magazine for the publishing of the book, and we're looking for 2017 at Grandmaster Dennis Brown again in Washington, D.C. But, you know, what we're doing is unselfishly for the education. You know, that's why we're doing the things that we're doing, is because we have a true desire to provide a sense of education for the martial artists or for anyone that wants to learn, study the martial arts. So, you know, like I said, and, you know, you and I have, Professor Gary Lee, you and I have had several conversations today in the direction that we're going, and I know that we're moving in the right direction. And, again, our purpose is to educate the martial arts, to keep it alive, and to realize that they're the great value that our society needs, because in many cases, I don't care how you look around the world today, we're really in a bad mess. And if you don't get into your own head and get focused on your own head, then, you know, that's, something is totally off. And martial arts is that level for to help us mentally, physically, emotionally. It's the goal-setting system. Martial arts is the connecting system to the person, even on a spiritual level. So there's so many things. So it was a great show tonight. I really enjoyed listening in, and Darlene, I know that you're one of our AMAA alumni, and Karen, we want to make sure that you're part of that this year. So we got of this. This is the first month, and we're going to have a phenomenal year.
Well, we're going to have a book signing September the 29th and 30th at the Cod Awards event, and Karen and she and Darlene will be there to autograph the book. And remember tonight, if you're listening to the show, call in the Who's Who in Martial Arts page, and you'll receive your book at $29.95. Okay, I'm going to say this, and this is from my heart to both of you. As they say, it'll kill two birds with one stone. Both your histories are incredible. I've been blessed at being a part of both of your lives. I get up in the morning, and I'll be honest with you, I think about you guys. I think about all the history generals. And I think about what we've done for 19 years, and even though, Sihan, you haven't been with me for 19 years, Karen and I have known each other for 30 years, but the point of it is, what we're doing is the next step for that next generation, for them to understand what you guys did for all of us. And with that said, thank you again for your time. I love you guys. Much, much, much mahalo from the heart. And until I see you again, hugs and kisses. Love you guys. Very good.
I love you too, Gary. Thank you, Professor Lee. It was a wonderful night.
Thank you.
Mahalo
and
aloha.
Mahalo, Sian. Okay, good night. Good night, Auntie.
Good night. Good night.
Good night. One last thing. This weekend, we're in North Carolina for Carrie Goldbeck's tournament. That's in Hillsborough, North Carolina. So if you'd like to know more about that tournament, you can give me a call at 919-618-8075. This weekend, Carrie Goldbeck will be having an AMAA Who's Who book signing, and she's also a part of the Sport Karate League. So if anyone is looking to go to a great event, then we'll be in North Carolina, Hillsborough, North Carolina, for Sensei Carrie Goldbeck's event. Everyone have a blessed evening.